Hello and welcome to the Road from Emmaus podcast. I'm Jason Lowe, joined by Andrew Chow, and we are two totally ordinary Catholic guys hoping to share our journeys. Like the disciples on the road to Emmaus, we've each encountered Christ in our lives. Join us as we talk about what comes next. If you're a practicing Catholic and you're like me, you've probably been attending Mass in what's called the ordinary form for most of your life. On today's episode, we talk about the traditional Latin Mass with special guest Eric Wong. We break down the major differences between the ordinary form and the Latin Mass, and talk about why the Latin Mass as a form of worship is so beautiful. We also discuss some news relating to the Latin Mass from back in July, when Pope Francis released a rule change regarding the ability to celebrate Mass in the old rite. It's a packed episode, but we hope you enjoy it and find it fruitful.
Mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. That is Latin, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about not just Latin, but the Latin Mass. And to talk about that, we have a special guest, a good friend of both me and Andrew's, Eric Wong. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Hello.
You are an expert in Latin Mass, or you're going to be our supposed expert. But before we even dive into that, I guess just quickly introducing you. I didn't prepare this. I don't know. You're a guy. You're a Catholic.
Yes.
You are a father. That's cool. How old is your daughter?
She is 3 months.
3 months old. Yep. So a new father. Obviously you and I have known each other basically our entire lives. Just because you lived around the corner from me. And then we became good friends, I guess, over the last, 5 years or whatever. But more than that. Obviously you're one of my closest Catholic friends and someone who has definitely led me along the path of how to be a good Catholic. And, you know, just in terms of Latin Mass, that was something that you introduced me to. So thought it would be good to have you on the podcast just to talk about this particular topic.
Mm-hmm. And we're also friends.
Yes. I was going to say, how do I introduce the fact that Andrew and Eric are also friends? You weren't neighbors.
No, we just met because we're both Catholic and Chinese, basically.
So we're both guys.
We're both guys. Yeah, yes. Good. Yeah, good. And yeah, we're also friends, but we didn't live around the corner.
So I do think this will probably be a pretty, it'll probably be longer than usual, just in terms of we have a lot to talk about. So why don't we just dive into it here? No lame segues other than what I started with.
I don't even know if that was a segue. That was it just started.
I was trying to Google like Latin phrases to start this off with. I didn't even say what it means. Mea culpa, maxima culpa means my fault, my grievous fault. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I Googled all these Latin phrases and I was like, which one is the one that I can pronounce the best? The one that actually only has three words. Yeah. It's a repetition of all the other ones. So let's just go into it here. We have a lot to talk about, but I guess first and foremost, what initially drew you to the Latin Mass?
That's a good question. I was actually called to the Latin Mass by my sister. So she, a little bit of a roundabout story, but she was going to teacher school, and then she had a friend who actually became a Salesian father. And he took her to introduced her to the Latin Mass. She went for a year or two. And then she brought me one day and I fell in love and I thought it was really, really cool. And then after maybe like a year of attending, the father that I met there is run by the Oratorians. He actually took me under his wing to become an altar server for the Latin Mass, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. I think that was where I, by no means an expert, but really threw me into the deep end of learning what the Latin Mass was about. Mm-hmm. And then I think I emceed for about 3 years. And we'll talk about what that means afterwards. And then... yeah, so that's kind of my exposure into the Latin Mass. My wife and I also got married in the old rite, mm-hmm. or also the Latin Mass. So that was very nice.
Andrew, you've been a few times as well, right?
I've been a few times, yeah. So another friend of ours also brought me to Latin Mass a few times. In Vancouver primarily, back when I was there. I think it was actually really interesting for me. My first experiences for sure were that it's very different, right? If you grew up with Novus Ordo or with like the Mass in like the common tongue that we normally see, it's very different of an experience. But my first reaction really was that it was much more beautiful for it, because, you know, one of the things that I found is that because I didn't understand what was happening, I had to pay a lot more attention, mm-hmm. and I had to pay attention to the sacraments that much more. And it was helpful for me too, just that I knew the Mass a lot better than than some people might, just because of the time I also spent altar serving. So I already knew the Mass, so I was able to follow along the trajectory of what was happening. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it definitely, you know, it's a very different experience if you haven't been before, and it's something super interesting.
I've been a couple times myself. So obviously once was at your wedding. Another time was at your invitation. And then I'm trying to remember if I actually went a third time, at the parish just up the street, St. Thomas, because they used to celebrate, Latin Mass. They still do.
Yeah.
I thought I saw on the website that they don't anymore, but I'm sure you're more up to date than I am. But but no, yeah, I think I'll dive into my own experiences as well as we get into it. But it was eye-opening, to say the least. And like you said, it forced me to pay more attention, I think, which is actually a good thing. Mm-hmm. Just because I was someone who was starting to become more and more autopilot during the Mass.
Yeah.
So I think we'll tackle a lot of things when it comes to the Latin Mass today. We're going to kind of try to break down, you know, what are the main differences between the Latin Mass and kind of the ordinary form of Mass that we're used to going to, that we're used to attending. And then also, I think just understanding, like, the beauty of the Latin Mass. I think that's something we really want to bring out today. You know, what is, for lack of a better term, what is the value, mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And just because, you know, most of the people, if not everyone who's listening to this, probably are, like, not regular Latin Mass attendees. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, well, what is the beauty? Why should we consider going to Latin Mass? I think we'll try to draw that out as well. I mean, I think in the last section of this, we'll also talk about the, let me pronounce this right, Traditionis Custodes.
Pretty good.
Yeah?
I don't know. My Latin's not much better.
Which is, it's better. No, just straight up is better. Which is something that was released by the Pope in mid-July, just kind of regarding the Latin Mass. And again, we will go into it, but we'll leave that towards the end, just to kind of talk about kind of that particular piece of news, and maybe the impact that has been felt by Catholics across the world. But first and foremost, like just off the top of your head, you've already listed, you know, through your experience of altar serving, whatever. What would you say are kind of the biggest differences between the ordinary form and the Latin Mass?
Oh, there's so many. First of all,
the biggest ones.
Yeah, well, the biggest one, it's in Latin. No surprise.
Fair.
There's a lot of history there as well. For those of you who are familiar, sometimes they call the regular Mass that we go to the ordinary form, and then the Latin Mass the extraordinary form. That's a bit of a hot take as well, so I'm not gonna delve there. Otherwise, they also call it the Tridentine Latin Mass, or TLM. So if you ever hear those terms, it's all about the same Mass. So, other big differences. First of all, it's Latin. Second of all, it's mandatory that it's ad orientem. The more Latin for you, you know ad orientem.
Yeah. But for our listeners.
But I mean, it's like a Latin term.
Yeah, that's fair. I should have just said that. I should have just opened it up with ad orientem.
So ad orientem means to the east. Or to the orient. I was going to say to the orient.
Yeah.
And it means that when the priest is celebrating the Mass, their back is actually turned to the people. And it's kind of a straight line. Let's say if there's a Mass that's being celebrated ad orientem, and it doesn't have to be Latin Mass only, it could also be the ordinary form. When you walk into the church, you actually see the back of the priest, and then in front of the priest is the altar, and then in front of the altar is the altar crucifix or altar cross. And then ideally on top of that, the tabernacle, and then ultimately, finally, on top of that, like a hanging massive crucifix.
All oriented towards Jesus, essentially.
Yes.
Yes.
And yeah, no, that's first of all, it strikes you, that's a beautiful image, because everything is in line, proper, man before the altar, which represents Jesus, which like ultimately is a sacrifice before God.
Mm-hmm.
Latin ad orientem, and then length of mm-hmm. time. Usually Novus Ordo Masses or regular Masses are about half an hour to an hour. I believe the Latin Mass is closer to an hour and a half, because there's a lot more singing. And the last point that I would say, because I've been talking for a long time, is silence. There's mm-hmm. a lot more silence mm-hmm. in the Latin Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So just in case anyone hasn't caught on, both Andrew and Eric have already used the term. Novus Ordo is Latin for ordinary form, I believe. So that just means the regular Mass that we go to in case, you know, for the third time, in case anyone didn't catch on to that. Okay, so already a lot of differences. I'm not sure how much we will get into every single one. But I think one of the things that struck me the most when I first went to Latin Mass, my very first time attending, was, like you said, the amount of silence. And a lot of that is because I think the priest is saying his prayers like privately, essentially. Like, he's saying his prayers, like, in front of the congregation, but the congregation doesn't actually hear those prayers being said. Why is that the case?
Or even see
that
the celebrant is saying those prayers. Because ultimately, you know, like, there's a vertical component and a horizontal. I don't know why I did vertical this one. There's a horizontal component and there's also a vertical component to the Mass or to any form of worship. And the vertical component is, you know, us and God. And the horizontal is us and, you know, man and our neighbors. So a lot of the prayers are done in silence because I think it's, you know, it's an offering, an oblation towards God. And he tells us to pray in secret. And that's not the only reason. But also, if the priest was praying out loud, there would be no silence. And we know that God speaks in the silence. I was thinking about that today. In the Bible, when they talk about Elijah, and Elijah goes up to, was it Mount Tabor or Mount, I forget. Maybe he goes up a mountain. Very beautiful. And then God says, you know, I will meet you there.
Mount Horeb?
Mount Horeb. I don't know. You could say
Wikipedia.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. So he goes up to Mount Horeb, and then, like, there's an earthquake, there's fire, there's thunder, there's tornado, and still God is not there until there's, like, a little whisper. And that is where he meets God.
Yeah.
And I think that is really, that idea of silence is really, you know, put forth in the Latin Mass.
I think what's really beautiful about it, too, in that setting is that silence in general can also just be uncomfortable, right? Yes. You know, depending on where you have silence. But when you have it in the Mass, I think there's a general understanding. There's an implicit nature of that silence is that it's sacred silence, right? And I think that also puts us in a different space is that, you know, if you were just sitting alone and then you're in silence, sometimes you feel fidgety, you're not sure what to do. But especially, you know, all the pieces you already mentioned, right? Being ad orientem, meaning like everyone there is before God, right? And everyone is coexisting in the silence. Everyone understands it is a sacred silence. It's meant to be for me to commune with God. And I think that also puts us in a different place to receive, at the end of the day, the Blessed Sacrament.
Yeah. It's one of the criticisms that I would say of the Latin Mass as well, that, you know, it doesn't feel very communal. It's all, you know, us and God. And there's tons of silence. But at the same time, if you think about the Novus Ordo, the regular Mass, there's, you know, the readings are done out loud, which is the same in the Old Rite. But there's a lot of communal singing. There's the sharing of peace. And, you know, you're giving everyone high fives and whatnot. And then there's, there's, you know, Behold the Lamb. Like, it was very, it almost feels as if it's a show sometimes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of focus on the celebrant.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, you know, like that deacon was, you know, like his preaching was so good. Mm-hmm. Well, when I go to the Latin Mass, most times I don't even think about the people. Like, I don't really see the altar servers. And being, especially serving as one, your job is meant to be not to be noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when the priest is with his back to her and like, oh man, that back is really good. That's not what you're thinking. It's very focused on what am I here at Mass for? It's not for the people, though that's a good component, but it's ultimately for God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it actually brings to mind something else for me with the Latin Mass that always strikes me every time I've gone. I haven't gone many times, but every time I've gone is that I think it's also very clear that everything is very deliberate. Like when you watch the priest moving from one place to another, when you watch the servers moving in, even like the way everyone interacts with each other, everything is extremely deliberate. And I think that also, you know, brings you to a different place, right? It's where like you start thinking about like, why are the things being done? And I think that's something that's in some sense is missing from the ordinary form. In the ordinary form, it's, you know, when I hear this, I say that, you know, and it becomes almost like a call and response kind of a deal.
Yes.
And when that happens, sometimes things get a little bit habitual, right? And you don't get to be thinking about why are we doing the things that we're doing? It's just because I'm a part of it. I'm just, what am I doing next? And I think that there is a piece there that, in a sense, it's interesting because I think that the supposition or the assertion that being silent next to each other is not being in communion is such a, it's just not true, right? I think like there's a lot to be said about being in communion in silence that can be a very powerful thing.
We don't all have to be holding hands or singing together.
Kumbaya.
It's funny because, so Eric, 3 months ago, he sent me a YouTube video. Excellent. It's on the Latin Mass. It's called Mass of the Ages, Part 1. You can find it on YouTube. It's 45 minutes long or so. And I finally watched it in preparation for this episode, and I learned that Jimmy Fallon is a Catholic, or he was raised Catholic. And one of the things that he said, one of the small things, or part of the reason why he turned away from the church, is because too many people were like doing the whole holding hands, the band was like performing, and like it kind of took away from his experience of worship.
Hmm.
Obviously, I think, you know, there were other reasons why he is no longer a practicing Catholic, but like that was something specifically in that video that he cited. And I guess this discussion reminds me of that, just because I feel like a lot of the times there are certain masses that we attend where that is definitely the focus. It's not so much on God anymore. There's so many other distractions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's one of the really attractive things about the Latin Mass. What called to me initially, I think it really appeals to men. And not to be sexist, but there's silence, there's mystery, and you want to know what's going on, but no one's going to show you, no one's going to tell you. For most of the time, if you go to a high mass, which, well, there are levels within the Latin Mass, which is kind of, that's a whole another complicated topic. You don't see a lot of what's going on. You see the backs, and there's so much mystery, silence, there's smoke, there's reverence, and you really want to know. Wow, like you hear the sound of angels, and as you said, everything's coordinated, orchestrated. Why do you do those things? Whereas with the new mass, I find there's a lot of show, there's a lot of tell. You know, you always want to show, don't tell. There's a lot of tell. There's a lot of, this is exactly why we're doing it. Let me explain this. Even at consecration, you know, the you know, this is my body. If you're, if you think about it, most of the churches and the priests are mic'd up, so you can hear everything, every breath. Every sneeze. And in the Latin masses that I've attended, it's all silent. If you're in the back, you can almost not even hear it. And it draws you in.
For sure.
And that really appeals to men, because it's not like, oh, Jesus is my boyfriend. Well, that is true. And Jesus is my lover. No, this is Jesus, silent, cold, hard, rigid, but also beautiful, mysterious.
It takes away the bells and the whistles at the end of the day. You know, it's really funny. And I'm sure we'll get into this as we keep on going through, because I don't want to spend too long on this part. But I think, I mean, at least for myself, there was a time in my life where I was like, why aren't more young people going to Mass? And like the first thought that came to mind was like, well, the music isn't as fun, you know? And it was like, oh man, if the music was fun, more people go to Mass. And it's just like, and then you go to Latin Mass and you realize, you know what, when you strip away all of those things, then all you get to see is the beauty, you know? Like when you strip away all those things, because you hear about different people, and I can't remember his name, but there was the young boy who passed away in like 05 or so, who I think was either beatified recently or canonized recently. And anyways, he's being looked at as one of like the first millennial saints. And I remember hearing a story that his mom had told, where
Carlo Acutis?
Yes.
Yep.
Where basically, the family actually wasn't religious. It was just they were walking by a church, and then the son was like, let's go in. I'm drawn in by something, right? That beauty is just, that's all you get when you go to Latin Mass. There's nothing else to bring you in except for the beauty. And I think it's so wonderful to kind of have that as the Christian testimony, to say, hey, we get that the culture has all these things, not to put us against the culture, but we get that the world has all these attractive things, and that those are all good things, but that's not the good that we present. The good that we present is fully just Jesus, and that's what you get when you go to Latin Mass.
Sorry, last point to add to that. I was attending Mass today, and there's a huge jumbo like presentation or screen. Not that that's bad, but again, that's a lot of tell, don't show. Like, oh, this is exactly what I should say at this point. And during consecration, I'm trying to focus on the Eucharist. And then I see this massive face of Jesus, like, beautiful, but it keeps on drawing my attention away from truly the presence of Jesus. Like, this is, oh, it's not, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But, you know, there's a time and place, right?
For sure, exactly.
I think a beautiful part of Latin Mass is just how, it almost, you can agree or disagree with me if this is a good summary, but, like, everything is deliberately oriented towards, pointing towards Christ and God, right? We actually, I do want to dive into this a bit more in terms of the music, because we've talked about music a few times. So a lot of times now in the ordinary form, literally the church across my street, they have a particular mass where they play a bit more praise and worship as the hymns than usual.
Yeah.
But even, you know, just regular hymns, which are still beautiful in their own right, that's great and everything. The music at Latin mass is typically Gregorian chant and polyphony. First of all, maybe a quick explanation of what those things are, and then why are they so beautiful, if you find them beautiful, which I think you do.
Do you want to take that?
I can start, and then you can add. Sure. Gregorian chant, so this is dating back to Pope St. Gregory the Great,
yeah.
Which if you listen to that episode, is my confirmation name. And essentially what he did was he basically wrote out music for the Mass. I think it was the first time that there was just a formalized, like standardized music for the Mass.
Yeah.
The way it's written, even, I can't remember what the form is called, but it's not written in the same way that we see music today. Everything is relative tone, but everything's in Latin, and it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you've never listened to it, it's a really great way of bringing you to prayer. Generally speaking, if you come across Gregorian chant, it's going to be the parts of the Mass that you come across. A lot of churches, you'll hear it, and you might recognize the tones, just because a lot of times you'll hear it in, particularly Lent, a lot of churches will switch over to chant for Lent for maybe one or two of the Mass setting parts. And it's just like, even in those instances, I think it's a nod to see that this is really a way to make sure we're brought into the right prayerful space of reference. Polyphony, I don't know as much. I can guess at it just from taking apart the word, that is probably having like multiple parts and or multiple people like back and forth maybe, but
yeah, poly being like multiple, maybe,
yeah.
And phony being sound.
Yeah.
So multiple sounds. Sorry, I was just looking up transcendentals, like this truth, beauty, and goodness,
yes.
In philosophy. And I feel like polyphony embodies that, those three values, because there's so much beauty in it. And so what is it? You have, I mean, at its barest, you would have four parts. And so you'd have, what is it, like soprano, alto,
tenor
bass.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just have four voices that are constantly layering the hymns. Like you've heard the Kyrie eleison, you've heard the Gloria, you've heard the Sanctus, all of these. But have you heard it, you know, like 50 times, like layered together?
Mm.
And it's sometimes you just get enraptured. Like I've actually seen people attending Latin Mass for the first time or even multiple times crying because it's so beautiful that their brain cannot even comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just shocked and awe that, you know, human voices could be so angelic.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a lot more to that.
Yeah, so that was the first thing I thought of when we were talking just now about like, oh, will people come to Mass more if we make the music more fun or whatever?
Mm.
It's just like, have you listened to the actual music during Latin Mass? Because like, you know, just like Blessed Carlo, like that's something that draws me, I guess because I'm also a little musically oriented, but that's something that draws me drew me towards Latin Mass when I first attended an invitation. I was like, wow, this is beautiful to listen to. I'm not participating in the singing at all, but to just be present and remain, I guess, within that music was a whole new experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and sorry, I just recalled, if any of the listeners are interested out there, there's the sisters at Ephesus. I think they're a religious order. And they have beautiful songs that do incorporate polyphony and Gregorian chant. Actually, they have a wonderful Advent album. So I really invite you all to listen to it. It's wonderful to just bask in.
Mm.
And one of the other aspects I know, at least for the churches that I attend, most of the singers are either volunteers or they're actually paid because they're professional singers.
Mm-hmm.
Because the priests and the church knows like, that's how you draw people. It's not how fancy your recording or audio setup is. If anything, those are kind of bad sometimes in those churches. But it's really the music, the thing that draws us out of our daily existence. Because life is hard, honestly
yeah.
speaking. And when you hear that music, it really takes mm-hmm. you out and reminds you, truth, beauty, goodness. This is what I live for. And this is what I will eventually die for. Yeah.
I can tell you, during my days of studying for exams and whatnot, I literally, when I was feeling stressed, I would just put on like Gregorian chant and it would make me feel better about everything.
Yeah. I mean, there's a time and a place, you know,
yeah.
it's very calming. It sometimes puts you to sleep. But I mean, that's a good thing. Like it's definitely no praise and worship. Like it's not as catchy. And most times people can't sing it, but just sit there, listen to it for even 5 minutes. And I guarantee it will change your life.
100%. And just to really put it to perspective, how I think all of this, just going back to the piece of tradition, that when you exude beauty, you don't need to reinvent it. When we talk about Gregorian chant, Pope Gregory the Great lived from 590 to 604. Like, this is 1,500 years ago that we're talking about that this was written. And it's still looked at, it's still sung in churches, it's still really just this mode of worship that continues to bring Christians around the world to that same place of reverence. So, you know, it's, I think that's part of the theme here, really, is that, you know, when we found the thing, which is Christ, and we found the modes that bring us there, we don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Just to quickly correct you there. So Pope Gregory the Great lived from 540 to 604, but he was the Bishop of Rome, so he was Pope from 590 to 604.
My bad.
Why was he alive for 14 years? Like, what did he do?
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Right. But that's besides the point, just in case anyone was confused.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I can hear kind of people listening saying, oh, you know, but I love singing at my local church. You know, I love, you know, feeling the music, and that really helps me to worship. And I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Jason, you actually brought up the idea of participation as well. That's a whole long story, and another one of those differences between Novus
Ordo. I want to get into it. So
sure. Okay. Yeah, we'll save it for.
No, I was like.
Oh, just now. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So a lot of people feel there's a term called active participation. Yeah. They feel like they want to contribute to the Mass because that's how they worship. Mm. And how does that manifest in our day and age? You have, you know, 12 extraordinary ministers of the Holy Communion. They're not ministers, they're extraordinary only when there's, you know, big things going on. But sometimes I see like 10 or 20 people in the sanctuary. There's people who kind of grab the microphone and feel like they have to do a Disney solo. I know I'm kind of poking fun, but a lot of people feel like I need to be there. I need to contribute actively, physically, in order to be part of the Mass. A lot of people are screaming about equality, like, oh, my 12 daughters need to serve at the altar because, you know, this girl and this boy, they're the same. Why can't we all participate in the altar this way? Oh, I have to be an usher, blah, 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 blah. Not that those things are bad, but the Latin Mass really takes that away from you. There's, and also having readers. Because in the Latin Mass, the priest usually does most of the readings. Or if it's not the priest, it's someone who's ordained or who's been instituted sacramentally or, you know, like religiously. Your active participation is sitting quietly in your pew praying. Mm. And like that's it. Like it's a different form of participation, and some people might not like it. As Andrew, you were saying, like, they might fidgety because there's so much silence, like, I need to do something. Yeah. How can I show God I love him if I'm not doing something? And the Latin Mass says, all right, you're going to sit down for an hour and a half and calm down because you cannot. Yeah.
And I think that's a great metaphor almost for almost our interior prayer life, really, right? So much of what we want to do is show God that we love him when God says, you just need to be yourself and be who you are and be who I made you to be. And I'm seeking relationship with you. You seek relationship with me, and that's where we'll meet. You don't have to go do all these things. It's great if you're using your gifts. Obviously, we're not downplaying any of that. Use your gifts. Share, and evangelize, and all those things. But when it comes to kind of your own relationship with Christ, God already loves you for who you are, and He's not calling you to, you know, do all these extravagant things or anything.
I think, like, to your point, Eric, none of the things we're talking about are bad. Right, like singing a Mass isn't an objectively bad thing. You know, being a minister of the Eucharist isn't an objectively bad thing in terms of participation in all these things. I think what's really different between participating that way in the ordinary form and going to Latin Mass and not having that ability is really the temptations that come with those activities. So, like, when I think about, or when you were saying that, what came to mind for me is that, you know, it really turns into an act of humility. Because at the end of the day, and we've talked about this before on the pod, we have a temptation to say, like, listen, God, like, let me do the heavy lifting for this relationship between us, right? Let me bring you along for the ride. My director actually recently said to me, because I struggle with what we call Pelagianism all the time, which is basically this idea of, you know, I'm going to affect my salvation. I'm going to be the one who, you know, does the heavy lifting. So what I just said, Pelagianism is basically saying, like, along this way, I'm going to bring Jesus with me, as opposed to the other way around, which is what we know it ought to be. And in that sense, going to Latin Mass forces you into that spot where it's like, it's an understanding that when I attend Mass, it's no longer about what I do, it's about what I receive, right? It's about how God can come to me and how God wants me to receive in this moment. Nothing about this can even be about my activity in that same way. And it's a really good, humbling kind of recorrection, or there's a better way to say that, but
like a reframing.
Like a reframing, exactly. Yeah. To reorient ourselves towards God. And it's really important, and I do want to bring this out, to say that none of this is to say that that can't happen in the ordinary form, right? I think Bishop Barron brought up a really great point that we can't say that there are inherently problems with Novus Ordo just by the very fact that St. John Paul II and St. Mother Teresa were fed by the ordinary form,
mm-hmm.
right? There is holiness there. There is great goodness there. There is beauty there to be received. It's just that I think, you know, some of these other kind of ministries that are available there can turn into temptations when no longer is it about me sharing my gifts. It's about me getting praise for the way I sang at Mass. Now it's about me. It's not about God anymore. Yeah. And those kinds of things.
Right? To be extra cheesy, I've heard this before, but like, it's not about what you are or who you are. It's about whose you are. You mm-hmm. are God's. It's mm-hmm. not, it's not even about what you receive. Like, also what you receive. Yeah. But more importantly, you're there. That's the important thing. And God will do the rest of the work.
Right.
I want to throw in also two saints. If you think about St. Peter at the, you know, at the night of the Last Supper, he says, oh, you know, like, Jesus, you can't wash my feet. I'm so lowly. Like, let me wash your feet. And then Jesus says, no, mm-hmm. sir, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how you enter into heaven. Mm-hmm. Same idea. Like, you need to let the Mass come to you. You need to let God come to you. But you also have to put yourself in a position, you know, like, you're following Jesus, you're there.
Yeah.
The other saint I want to talk about, St. Therese of Lisieux, of whom I'm reading right now. And she says, you know, Jesus, I am so small and so tiny, I cannot do these things. I physically cannot do these things. So I'm going to need you to help me. I'm going to need you to do that for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you said, reframing, review of how our relationship with God should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A couple of quick bullets before we wrap up this particular segment. So you talked about, you know, trying to avoid the whole sexism thing. I want to return to that really quickly. One of the first things people will notice if they attend Latin Mass for the first time is that a lot of the women who are attending are present in veils.
Mm.
What's up with that?
Yeah, it's an idea behind humility, but also distraction. Because I think I can speak for many men, but when I see, you know, someone in the pew that I recognize, or someone who's very beautiful, with just luscious locks, even from the back, very, very beautiful as a married man, it's distracting.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that Jesus on the jumbo screen, beauty is distracting.
Mm-hmm.
And so usually, typically for women, they would wear a veil. White veils are typically for those who are not yet married as a sign of purity. And then married women, usually like a darker color, like dark brown or black, as a sign that, you know, like they're, yeah, I guess they're taken. I don't know. It's a weird idea. And it's also a calling that people have. It's not, oh, okay, I'm in the Latin Mass, I have to wear a veil now. It's something you're called to, but it really does help with the distraction. Likewise, I don't know if people have caught on to this, but for men, you know, usually take off their hats during prayer and also during the Mass. And you say, excuse me, sir, what about, you know, that man with the luscious locks who's distracting? Okay, well, sorry about that. But typically, men draw more attention to themselves wearing a hat, wearing something on their head, mm-hmm. some accoutrement, but women less so. Yeah, and same thing about why women can't be at the altar. Sorry, a little bit of a ramble. But why women can't be at the
altar. I was going to ask that next, so it's okay.
Yeah, not that they're not allowed to be, but they're more distracting, mostly. When, especially as an altar server, usually, what, like 5 to 16, I've seen, like, you know, even older, like I was serving like 20-something, a full-grown woman or a woman who's going through, you know, like the budding process. I don't know why I'm saying it so weird. But as they're growing up and they're filling out, it can be distracting. Even if they're wearing an alb or a surplice, you see the form, the shape, and that's how God made them. But unfortunately, it takes away from my love of the Mass. If I see, you know, a man or a boy, they all kind of look the same, to be honest. They're all, you know, wearing black.
Especially
wearing
when you put an alb on.
Exactly. They just look like formless sticks moving. And that's, not to say that's how it should be, but, you know, you take the focus off of yourself and then people can focus on, you know, like what's important.
Mm-hmm.
In the proper context.
Again, I go back to, again, hopefully the summary that I put together was accurate of how everything, the intention of Latin Mass is to strip away all those distractions and orient yourself to Christ. And so mm-hmm. whether that's altar servers, whether that's the way the music is deliberately put together, or, you know, the readers, like you said, they're not being readers. I think all of that is wrapped together. You just talked about how men typically take off their hats when they're praying or at Mass. What about the priest? Because one of the first things that you see at Latin Mass, the celebrant is wearing this funny hat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's called a beretta. And I think it also depends also what order they're from, which is really cool.
Cool.
So if they're an Norbertine, which is a different order, religious order, they wear all white, and actually they have a four-pointed beretta. Whereas most priests who are celebrating the Latin Mass, they have like a three-point. And it's funny, there's an intricacy to that as well. If you're serving, you actually have to hand the priest the beretta in a certain fashion, because they have to put it between their middle finger and then put it on their head. So if you hand them the wrong side, they kind of at you until you get it right. And there's so many times where I've stressed out about that, because the priest and the self, they're coming close. I'm like, which way? There's only so many.
I'm just imagining you like starting to rotate it as you're walking to him and then waiting for a subtle nod.
No joke. Sometimes I'll hand him the wrong side and he's very polite and he'll just reach around my arm to get the right. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
So like, what is the meaning behind it? Is there any meaning?
I don't really know about that aspect, to be honest, but
yeah.
They do. So during the Mass, when the priest is sitting down, the celebrant is sitting down, or well, whoever's there, they will put back on the beretta. And during the Holy Name of Jesus, or any time there's like a sacred line that's prayed or sung, they actually take off their beretta and bow their heads, mm-hmm. which is a custom that has been lost in the new culture. Do you want me to talk about that briefly?
Sure, briefly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are different ways of showing reverence. And if you think about, you know, Jesus is our Lord and King, so you want to show him reverence. So every time you say or hear the holy name of Jesus, you actually should be bowing your head slightly. If they mm-hmm. say the saint of the day, you should also be doing the same.
Mary.
Sure. Yeah, Mary. Mm-hmm. And also, especially during the creed, not a lot of people do this. Mm-hmm. In the new rite or Novus Ordo, when they say
And by the Holy Spirit, was incarnate of the Virgin Mary and became man.
Yeah.
Yes, at that point you should bow your head. In the old rite, you actually are supposed to genuflect, and the whole
right.
church genuflects at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it even trippier is when you're listening to polyphony and they're singing. The priest and the people at the altar, they actually
goes forever.
Yeah, well, they genuflect on their own because they're reading out the prayer, but at the same time, the cantors are singing it. So they will genuflect once on their own, and then when the cantors get to that point, everyone genuflects
mm-hmm.
again. So there's a lot of significance. Your body is showing your reverence in that way. So even in these micro gestures, it's significant.
Well, you know, I actually think that those practices, at least from what I've seen, are coming back a little bit, at least with our generation, of little things. So I've made that a practice for myself, is whenever I hear or see or say the name of Jesus, I'll do a little nod, even when I'm being a lector, you know, just like, it doesn't have to be big, right? But just a little nod. And you know, I think it goes a long way, because to your point at the end there, and I think this is a really important piece with all of us talking about tradition, is that actions matter more than I think people realize, right? Actions are a physical, a tangible way to remind our body and our minds of what's happening. And bows play into that. Genuflecting plays into that.
Kneeling.
Right? Kneeling. All of this comes into that. So why do we kneel when we pray? Well, we don't always have to kneel when we pray in that sense, right? Like if you're walking and you say a quick prayer, you don't have to like on the sidewalk, just like kneel and like that's how you pray. Like, no, it doesn't have to be that way. But in the Mass at church, there's a particular piece of reverence where, look, you know, so another practice, not to virtue signal, but another practice recently is like me realizing, you know what, like, from when the consecration happens up until when they put the host back into the tabernacle, Jesus is there. And there's something different about that. So now I've started just kneeling all the way until they put the host back into the tabernacle, because Jesus is present. He's in front of me. If I'm really saying he's my Lord,
mm-hmm.
there's something different about that. And I need to, even if I don't fully understand it, even if I only get an inkling of it right now, I need my body to understand that there's something different happening here. And I think that goes a long way, actually.
Yeah, to your point, like, we have monkey brains and we forget very quickly.
Yeah.
Well, I have monkey brains.
I'm sure. We all do.
Yeah, I'm sure my wife would say something different. But if you've ever tried to go and tie a child's shoelaces or washed anyone's feet, not that that's a very popular custom, but if you've ever done that before, you know just by the very act of it,
mm-hmm.
it's humiliating
mm-hmm.
because you're getting down low. And the same thing with the Mass. There's a lot of kneeling. There's a lot of genuflection. And one of the cool parts about the Mass I forgot to mention is when the priest, the celebrant, begins the Mass, he actually doesn't just walk up to the altar. He's not allowed to get there. He has to pray and purify himself at the foot of the altar. And their mm-hmm. prayer is called Prayers at the Foot of the Altar. Mm. And it's Psalm 42, and there's responses, but it's all done silently. And just seeing that happen, like, you know, you don't just willy-nilly walk up to the altar.
Yeah.
And that's how we inform our brains, you know, that even though we hate working out, it's a good thing for our bodies, and we are better for it. Likewise, we might not remember to do all these signs of devotion, but when we do them, it informs us about how we should be treating our Lord.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Something I took away from the Mass of the Ages video, movie, documentary that you sent me was we can't believe rightly if we don't worship rightly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so to your point, Andrew, about, you know, like the things, the actions that we do with our bodies, or, you know, humiliating ourselves, that is something that we need to be able to truly understand our relationship with Jesus, and to understand that God is our creator and our king. And, you know, we had an episode last year about, like, is Jesus our buddy? The answer is yes. But also, first and foremost, he is our king. He's our creator. And so just remembering that and going through all of these, you know, actions and motions and the way we pray and everything, it 100% contributes to how you view God in your relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
I think just to wrap up the segment about the Latin Mass in general, what would you say to those who are, you know, still hesitant or kind of avoidant about attending Latin Mass?
Sorry.
It's okay.
Sorry, I would say, first of all, try to find one close to you.
Yeah.
They're very hard to... I don't want to say very hard, but they can be difficult to find. Second of all, there's a little bit of a bad rap, and I understand. There are often called rad triads or radical traditionalists.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're, you know, they can be a little bit overbearing at times. But remember, you're not there for the people. You're there for the worship. You're there for Christ. We've heard many times, and people tell this to me all the time, like, oh, you know, someone came up to me and said, oh, you shouldn't be wearing pants. You should be wearing a skirt. Or, what are you doing? Like, don't show your shoulders off, blah, 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 blah. Like, there's a lot of judgment, and there's a lot of holier than thou in the community, which is not healthy. So mm-hmm. I want to say, just as a precursor, like, bolster yourselves, gird your loins. It's going to be a little bit difficult to even break into the community. But remember, at the end of the day, what you're going for and who you're going for. Just as a, like, emotional preparation. Like, no one's in a coven. Go, fa-la-la-la-la, welcome. Here, you can have a seat here.
There's no ministry of hospitality.
There's a lot of silence. There's tons of silence. And you're going to... Oh, sorry, one more thing. You're not going to know what's going on pretty much half the time, if not all the time, even if you're well-versed in the Mass and tradition. Some people bring a book with them, or, you know, a missalette. I would say, honestly, just sit there and absorb the first mm-hmm. time. It's going to be so overwhelming for your senses. You know, mm-hmm. when you close your eyes, you hear almost everything magnified. Likewise, when you go there, just sit there and absorb. You're not going to get it. There's going to be a lot of Latin. Why are we even here? This is really long. I have to pee. It's been an hour and a half. Is it still going to go on? But just be there. Yeah. Be there. Withhold your judgment. Let it finish. And then it might be for you. It might not be for you. But I think it's a good place to start.
I think there's a couple of practical pieces too, right? So one, like, know what you're getting into. Know that you're not going to have that same element that we've talked about at length now.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say ad nauseum.
Yeah, well,
ad
nauseum.
really just, you know that it's different. Know what you're getting into. A more practical piece as well is to know that if you're not in a state of grace, there isn't the practice of going up to actually receive a blessing, I think. Generally, yes. if you're not going to receive the Eucharist, you stay in your pew. Just a more practical piece. So you don't walk up there with your arms crossed and everyone's wondering what's going on. That's a little awkward. So just in case. But yeah, just really at the end of the day, know what you're getting into. And I think part of it is just kind of get over yourself and try it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a piece here where, you know what, you gotta get past the pride. And the whole point is to not have the pride anyways. So get over yourself, give it a shot. And like Eric said, it might be for you, it might not be for you. You can hit us up in the comments later if you tried it and loved it.
Yeah, let us know what you think. I think it's funny that you said, you know what you're getting into, because yeah, here's our podcast of like 35 minutes so far or whatever it is. And we sped through like all the parts about Latin Mass, but we definitely didn't even go in depth into anything. And like you said, it will be overwhelming for your senses of this, you know, first time going, because it was for me. And so, you know, do your best to know what you're getting into, but it's also okay if you don't know what you're getting into and you come out and it's like, holy smokes, like that was not anything that I expected at all.
I was going to say, there's almost zero expectation.
Yeah.
You don't have to respond in a certain way. Just follow the person in front of you. If you're if you're sitting in the front, take the second pew. And then that, yeah, maybe that's another practical tip. Like, don't worry. Just,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
just there for Christ. Yeah. And if you can't hear what's going on, if you don't know what's going on, like, honestly, back in the day, people didn't respond. They didn't make the responses. They were praying the rosary. They were doing devotion, Stations of the Cross.
Interesting.
If anyone knows, there's a point called the Hung Eiji Tour, the Epiclesis. You'll know it. You know, after the gospel, after the homily, after all the preparation of the gifts, the priest will put his hands together over the gifts.
When you hear the first ring, usually, if you're paying attention, if you go to Mass where there actually is, yes. I don't remember what they're called, but the bells.
Yeah, the bells. Yeah. And actually, if the bells are for that purpose.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are, you know, they're praying, they're doing their devotions.
Well, they don't understand Latin.
Yeah, but back in the day, that bell was actually a warning bell to say, hey, we're about to start consecration.
Yeah.
That's something to pay attention to. So don't beat yourself up, just go.
So one of your first tips, Eric, was, you know, first of all, just try and find a Latin Mass near you.
Mm.
With this whole Traditionis Custodis that has been released by Pope Francis, maybe I'll explain what that is first before we kind of dive into it. So the Pope issued what is called a motu proprio, which is basically a rule or a law change, because the Pope is the executor and legislator and executor of the church's laws. He can kind of issue these changes to those laws and rules with his, like, just out of his own choice, with his own motivation. It's unsolicited. It's not like someone or a bunch of bishops like petitioned him to do it, although they could have. It was something that he just decided to do. So Pope Francis issued this motu proprio that was released in mid-July. I remember specifically it was mid-July because the day before Andrew and Cherry's wedding, we were picking up Cherry's bouquet and I saw on the news that this had happened. Basically, he said that the situations in which the Latin Mass could be celebrated would be narrowed down. Previously, a priest could kind of just, I think, decide on his own to celebrate Latin Mass. Now that priest has to go out and seek permission from his local bishop before he can go and celebrate that celebrate the Latin Mass. Now it's more, I guess what this will result in is that there will be designated locations for Latin Mass. So we're not necessarily, you know, Pope Francis isn't necessarily canceling Latin Mass altogether, but would you, like, the question has to be asked, I think, is this the beginning of the end for the Latin Mass?
It's funny, I've read some pieces back and forth. A little bit of history there before we get to let's stop the Latin Mass. Pope Benedict, actually, when he was Pope, issued a statement similar, a motu proprio called Summorum Pontificum, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what actually allowed priests to start saying the old Mass again. Sometimes you'll hear 1962 Missal, that was the last revised one, but there's older missals. And there's a lot of argument behind, why don't we do the 1962 Missal? Because that's where the vast majority of saints originated from. And Jason, I think you had mentioned before, or Andrew, that PJB2, like Pope John Paul II and Mother Teresa, St. Mother Teresa, were kind of after that time in the Novus Ordo. After Summorum Pontificum, it's been many years, and then now there's this issued statement coming out. I don't think it's the beginning of the end. It is a restriction, for sure, and it's quite hotly contested. So there are a lot of people up in arms, like the Radtrads are just very angry about it. Like, oh, you know, Pope Francis isn't even the Pope, the rule is fake, Pope Benedict forever. And there are people like, oh yeah, now all the young Catholics are going to go to SSPX and like break off from the church.
What's SSPX?
SSPX is the Society of St. Pius X.
Okay.
And that's a schismatic group. Like they don't believe in the Pope. And the kind of Catholic equivalent is FSSB, which is the Fraternity of St. Peter. It's very strange. There's a lot of history there as well. But FSSB is very, like, very traditional, and they do the Latin Mass. That was a bit of a history lesson. Essentially, it makes life difficult, and my personal thoughts on the matter are, Pope Francis was a little bit heavy-handed with his wording.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that a pope will say, you know, like, effective immediately, or, you know, like, as of today. If you've noticed anything in the church, it's very slow on the uptake.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you have to wonder, like, what were his motivations? He said he had consulted with his fellow bishops. Why did he issue that statement? And, you know, some people say he's, you know, like the Antichrist or whatever, like that. That's a long, long story. And not, I don't think it's a way to interpret his actions charitably. He says it's about unity. You know, he says, you know, the church is splintering apart, you know, like the Radfrads, and then you have like the liberals. And I feel like he made a choice there. You know, like when he, like the whole time before this, he said, you know, I'm just not going to say anything. I'll let the liberals go. I'll let the Radfrads go. And like, they'll just continue onwards.
Right.
But then now he's coming down and saying, you know, like the traditionalists, like you can't do this anymore or not as freely. But I think also it's a call to those people who celebrate Novus Ordo in an improper way, that being very lax or, you know, making up their own rules, that you need to shape up. Mm-hmm. And instead of offending the Novus Ordo crowd, he chose to offend or be very limiting to the traditional crowd.
Mm. So he is, the motivation that kind of he cites is unity.
Right.
But, you know, if you've been following the news over the last 4 months or whatever, like you said, there's a lot more of a divide.
There's a lot of uproar.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of young Catholic families and young Catholic men who are being drawn to the old mass because of everything we talked about thus far. Like if you have a division of your company that's growing, that's, you know, growth on growth, but year over year growth is skyrocketing, why don't you dump more resources than that instead? Mm-hmm. I think Father Jonathan Robinson from the Oratory, who passed away at the start of the pandemic, mm-hmm. he has this beautiful synthesis of what it means to serve as a Catholic priest in our times. He would celebrate the high, like the Latin Mass, but he would also celebrate the Novus Ordo done well. Mm-hmm. Done well being, you know, with proper reverence, with incense when required, but he had the readings done in Latin. Everything was ad orientem. And honestly, I feel like for the vast majority of the traditionalists, that's what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be done to the nines. It's effectively, it's not possible in all times. Like I've been to Latin masses where there's only four people. Like you need at least six servers to do it properly and two priests. It's a lot of effort. So for everyone else, like what are they going to do? Mm-hmm. We just want the mass celebrated well, reverently, with silence, with beautiful music. And that is a lot to ask for, you know, like the priests that are already overtaxed.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, well, I think, you know, that's kind of what I was trying to open the door to earlier as well. When we talked about, you know, like we're not saying the Novus Ordo was inherently bad, right? I think that there's a piece where there needs to be that understanding. There are parishes, so there's a parish I went to when I was back in Vancouver that also celebrated the ordinary mass well. You know?
Exactly.
And it makes a difference. And that's, it's actually really interesting, like this particular parish, you actually see that people flock to this parish in droves compared to many of the other parishes in Vancouver, which might have some dwindling populations these days. And it's really interesting because, you know, why is it? You know, some people say it's just because the priest is a good preacher, which he is, but I don't think that's it. You know, there are things that he does that really, you know, he celebrates also ad orientem once a month. You know, he makes concessions. It's not going to be like I'm flipping everything on his head. Because I think previously the parish that he is now at might have been a little bit more on the liberal side of things, you know? And so it's, you know, take your compromises, make your way back, but it makes a difference, you know? We talked a couple episodes ago when we were talking about the Eucharist. We talked about how, you know what, like for me at least, it makes a difference when I see a priest who actually properly reverences the Eucharist and is paying attention to the crumbs and a priest who isn't. And it's little things like this that I think, again, go a long way, you know. It's the, who was it? I think it was Brandon Vaught was talking about in one of his podcast episodes with Bishop Barron, that there are little things that go a long way for the raising of his children. Mm. The fact that every time they enter a chapel, church, anywhere where Jesus is, they genuflect. That goes a long way. Same way for properly celebrated mass versus a mass where there is literally a rock band in the background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's Novus Ordo doesn't have to be the rock band. And I think that's a piece that you're kind of touching on here. The traditionalists are saying, hey, look, I get that there are people where the Latin mass, let's say you just don't have the attention for it. You know, that could be a real barrier and a real cross.
Mm-hmm.
And having things in a language that's understandable can make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Great, beautiful. let's not go too far with it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'd want to circle back to with Father Jonathan Robinson. No, it's perfectly fine. With Father Jonathan Robinson, one of the beautiful things that he wrote about was, we can't go backwards. You know, like the priest and like the Holy Spirit has guided the church into the form of the liturgy that it is today. So you can't just say, oh, 1962 forever. Like, no, time just froze at that point. Like, that's not realistic. We need to find a way to, you know, bring the good from the 1962 Missal into the Novus Ordo. Like, it's not all or nothing. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful synthesis of both. Mm-hmm. And I've heard one of the priests active in our diocese, they said they were really inspired by sung English Mass. Like, see, that's one of those things where, you know, you join the two, mm-hmm. and already there, you're drawing people mm-hmm. in. Mm-hmm. And after having this whole conversation, like I was chatting with the seminarian like a year ago, and I was saying, oh, you know, like we should just do adorantum, and like people should kneel and receive on their tongue, and like should all do all these like TLM things. And he said, honestly, people didn't even come to Mass. Like, the fact that people come to Mass on Sunday is already a win.
Yeah.
So let's not get up in arms. I'm not saying the liturgy is not important. It's very important. But there are a lot of other issues at stake that we could also put our energy into. So instead of fighting amongst ourselves, let's just get to a place where we have decent enough liturgy, you know, we receive the Eucharist, and then let's work on evangelizing those around us.
Yeah.
I don't know if you just answered the question, but kind of my next question was just like, it's been 4.5 months now since Pope Francis has released this. Like, what are we doing now? What's next? Like, as someone, I guess, who's more in touch with the Latin Mass and the Latin Mass community, right? Like, what's going on? I guess there are people in uproar, but I'm sure there are also the people who are just kind of like, you know, are they just going about it in their own way? They're still going to Latin Mass in the same way as before. Nothing's really changed for them, or what's up?
It's interesting. There's a priest named Father Zed who's very active, and he celebrates both. And he said, you know, like, the motu proprio is not binding. So it's probably one of the documents that are probably that are likely going to just be ignored over time,
mm-hmm.
Because you can tell the church to do something and they might not change unless it's a decree from the chair.
Yeah.
That's not frequent.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know what that means, it's like an imperial law, almost like the Pope says this is the way it goes, and like I brook no arguments. That's very rare and hasn't been done very often in the history of the church. So unless it's to that degree, people are probably going to just continue. Like, if you have a bishop that doesn't like the Latin Mass in their diocese, they're going to try to squash it, and that's what's going to happen. And if you have a priest or like a bishop that's very neutral, it's just going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are going to find a way to worship Christ with some heavier crosses and some lighter crosses. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Latin Mass will continue. But hopefully, like, you know, we're going to get more of that infusion into the Novus Ordo so more people can appreciate. And, you know, it would be a joy, not a joy, but it would be great to say, oh, you know, like Latin Mass is kind of like how the Novus Ordo is celebrated at my local church. That would be amazing. Because
mm-hmm.
that's ultimately what mm-hmm. we want. Yeah.
I think it was in that same video that we referenced a few times now from the Mass of the Ages. I think it was really interesting when there was someone who was saying, like, oh, as someone who's going into my PhD in theology, I thought that the only difference between the two was the translation. I think that's kind of what you're touching on. It'd be great if we can get to that point where that is the difference. And I think, you know, my hope, I guess, with all of this is that, you know, we can focus on the, I suppose, the spirit of the message that Pope Francis is trying to give, right? Which I think, to your point, is a bit of a call to action, a bit of a smartening up, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of understanding, you know, what's happening here. What are we doing both from the clergy and from the lay people? I think it matters both ways, you know? I think that in some cases, you know, we put everything on the clergy to say, hey, you guys need to change the way that Mass is done. But at the end of the day, if especially in the Novus Ordo, the majority of the people who are active in the Mass are lay people, right? We're lay people who are part of different ministries. And you know what? There's something to be said about kind of looking at the traditionalists and looking at this and saying, look, like, if people are this up in arms about it, there's probably something to be seen here, you know? I feel like often enough, or for many Catholics who grow up only knowing the Novus Ordo, you don't even know what you're missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't even understand what the difference is. For a lot of people, for myself included, up until very recently, my understanding of Latin Mass is just that's pre-Vatican II,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's how Mass was until we could celebrate in the vernacular, in the local language, right? But to understand that that's not the case, there's more to it than that, and to actually look at it to understand why it still exists and what I can learn from it, I think that's a piece that is would be constructive for everyone, because that's where the only way to learn that, in essence, I mean, like, sure, you can research, but the way to really understand is to talk to people and say, hey, why do you want Latin Mass? I get that these things happen. I get that it's ad orientem, but like, why is that beautiful for you? Why do you keep going back? And then that dialogue, I feel, will go a long way to bringing our church forward, right?
Mm.
So we talked about how one of our most practical tips is going to find somewhere that celebrates the Latin Mass, that has the Latin Mass. Most of our listener base is in Toronto. So in Toronto, the parish that you usually go to if you do attend Latin Mass is Holy Family Parish, which is at King and Jameson, I think.
Yep.
So that's kind of in the heart of Toronto-ish. I did look this up during our episode. They are still celebrating Latin Mass every Thursday evening, I believe, at St. Thomas the Apostle, which is in Markham. So that's another place to go. It's Thursday evenings in Latin. Maybe I went on Friday. I must have gone on Friday. But anyway, yeah, that's on their bulletin. So St. Thomas the Apostle in Markham. Andrew, I don't know if you have any recommendations for Vancouver.
I actually do. Yeah, it's also called Holy Family Parish, which is kind of funny. Oh. But it's basically, if I'm recalling off the top of my head, it's right at like Victoria and 33rd.
Sure.
Right around there.
Sure. This guy.
And is that Holy Family Parish? Sorry, is it like every Sunday, do you know? Or is it like regularly?
I think every Mass they do is in the Latin Mass. Wow. If I'm not wrong, which I could be.
Oh, sorry. So for the Holy Family down like in Toronto, it's only the 11 o'clock Mass. And it is packed. I think
even nowadays.
Yeah, because you have to register online, and they don't use Eventbrite. They use some other system.
Sure.
But I think it sells out within the hour, and they have such high attendance that they have to split the masses every week. So it's A to M, I think, last names, and then N to Z, and still it's a full house every time. So
well, they just convert one of the other masses to Latin. Do you
honestly? For those of you who have done it before, it's a lot of work. It's tons of preparation, and it's taxing for sure. Like if you think about how much chanting goes into it, and just organization wise, it's very difficult. So not every Mass there is in Latin, but I think they usually have a like St. English Mass, or they do have a Latin Mass daily, but at certain times. And they also have it at St. Vincent de Paul, which is their kind of sister church, which is Roncesvalles, really very close to Holy Family downtown.
So, and I just double checked, and it is every Mass is in Latin there.
Wow.
And they have, this is crazy actually, they have like two Masses a day during on weekdays, three Masses on Sunday, and you can just go into their website, holyfamilyvancouver.ca, and you'll see it. Adoration, like they have the works here. It's pretty good.
Sorry, one more caveat, because I'm seeing on Andrew's computer here. There's distinctions in the Latin Mass.
Yes.
Just going to touch on it briefly in case you go and you're like, wow, that wasn't what it was all hyped up to be. Like, there was no singing. there's three kind of categorizations, and it's really cool. There's a low Mass, there's a Missa Cantata, which is sung Mass, and there's a high Mass. So there's those three levels. If you are fortunate enough to have a high Mass being celebrated in your city, definitely go check it out. High Mass is when they have a minimum of one priest and two deacons, sometimes three priests in the Mass celebrating together. And also, I think like minimum six altar servers, but sometimes up to like 12. It requires a lot of manpower. And then the Missa Cantata is usually like, you know, four servers maybe and one priest. And it's still sung, but it's sung mainly by the priest. So you're not going to get professional singing. Depends on the ability of your priest. Don't give them too hard of a time. And the low Mass is usually like a private Mass or a daily Mass. It's half an hour, maybe 40 minutes, and it's one celebrant, so the priest, and then one altar server. So it's much more low-key. So if you go to a low Mass and you're expecting a high Mass, you're going to be disappointed. If you go to a high Mass expecting a low Mass, you're not going to get disappointed. You're like, wow, this is very long. Yeah, so something to watch out for.
So the 11 a.m. Toronto Holy Family is high mass.
High Mass. And then I think the daily ones are low Mass, typically.
Cool.
Yeah, even our wedding Mass was Missa Cantata because it's hard to get the people together.
And then in Vancouver, I think it's noon sung Mass will be the high Mass, I think, likely.
Cool.
But I don't know that for sure.
And if you're not in Toronto or Vancouver, well, neither of us, or none of us are from wherever you are, but definitely keep looking. I'm sure it exists, and Google is a friend. Eric, it's been amazing having you, just enlightening us on the Latin Mass and, you know, from your personal experiences and your knowledge and everything. We know you are also a constant listener of our podcast, so thank you for that. You have contributed to, you know, the quote unquote success that we've had so far and everything. But no, honestly, it's been amazing having you, so thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
So it is Advent. Advent has just started, so, you know, hope everyone has a good Advent. Wow. Wait for the Lord. I don't have anything else to close off this episode with, but we'll be praying for everyone. Oh,
sorry, I have one more thing. Yeah. Just to fix that landing. So in terms of like references, if you're interested, they do have High Mass streamed online. For those of you who can't attend or want to have an idea of what's going on. There's two books I would recommend. There's one like the Latin Mass for Children. It's not really for children because it's quite complex, but it's beautifully illustrated. It talks about all the different things that are going on in the Mass. And my sister has given that to her kids during the Mass to kind of enjoy. So I think that's good for adults and children. And then the other book, if you want to get deep into the theology of it, the High Mass is longer because there's a lot more prayers and a lot more done in silence. There's a book that I read called The Mass, appropriately, and it's by Dom Prosper Guéranger, and it blew my socks off. It was such an amazing read, and I think it's further unlocked if you've ever been to the High Mass, because it talks about why they do the things they do, why is the subdeacon holding a paten in front of his face. If you don't know anything I just said, you should read that book. It's a wonder. And if you can't find a physical copy, I think they're digital ones.
I will be throwing a bunch of the resources in our show notes. So we referenced the Mass of the Ages video. You recommended Polyphony and Gregorian Chant by the Sisters of, what was
Ephesus.
It? Ephesus. Yes, okay. Traditionis Custodis, I will reference that as well. And then the two books that you just recommended, I will throw that in the show notes as well. So a lot of resources for those who are curious. All right, now are we good to wrap up?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. So thank you everyone for listening as always, and you'll hear from us in a couple of weeks.
Bye everyone.
Happy Advent.